We're joined by Kamal Mu, entertainment lawyer and author of the book, The Straightforward Guide to the Music Biz. An entertainment lawyer breaks down the industry. Kamal represents a variety of musicians and labels, including megastar Janet Jackson. Part 1. Are you a creative or entrepreneur who's sick of all the red tape? Sick of gatekeepers and powerful digital media platforms that cater to celebrities and people with deep pockets? I mean, you got talent, you got skills, but you can't seem to break through. It's time to destroy.
Destroy.
The podcast helping entrepreneurs and creators conquer the barriers between them and the people. What's up, everyone? I'm your host, Christopher Grant Sr. Thank you so much for listening to Destroy. Now, I know there are a million things you could be doing right now, but you took time out of your busy day to listen to me. So sit back, relax, and open your ears and enjoy the Uneven Playing Field series.
Destroy Digital Media Platforms, the new book by Christopher Grant Sr., an insightful, eye-opening quick read that tells you why your content everywhere gets you nowhere and how to rise above the digital media clutter. Visit destroybook.com.
We have a treat for you today. Today we have entertainment lawyer and author Kamal Mu. Kamal has worked with a variety of musicians and labels, including megastar and icon Janet Jackson. Welcome to Destroy, Kamal.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Look, I love this book. I love that it's concise. I love that it's easy for readers to get the answers they need quickly by skimming through the various chapters. What made you decide to write this?
Well, you know, the book really came out of the fact that I have a lot of clients who come to me and ask me the same things over and over again about copyright, about, you know, what's in a typical record contract and so forth, or they'll send me a contract and have me evaluated for them. So, you know, the same thing has kept on coming up over and over again. And I thought, you know, I think there's a real need for this information to be out there, just because there's a lot of people, even in the industry, who don't know a lot of this stuff. And I figured it'd be useful, and there's, you know, there's a demand for it.
Tell my audience a little bit about your background.
So I grew up in Miami. I wanted to actually be a record producer when I was in high school. And it turns out I didn't really have the talent for it. I enjoyed it, but I just didn't have the talent for it. And then as I got older, I was like, well, I still want to be in the music business. And so I looked at the business legal side of it. So then I went to USC for undergrad. I was a music industry major. And then I went to Southwestern Law School. Also in LA, and concentrated mostly on entertainment classes. Mm-hmm. And then, the funniest thing happened, I graduated, passed the bar, and then my brother's band just kind of blew up on MySpace back in the day, like in 2007. Uh-huh. And it just, they were like a screamo rock band, and they did a cover of a hip hop song in like a screamo style. And it just mm-hmm. blew up from there. Okay. And they got offered, they were getting 50,000 plays a day. And then they got offered a record deal and they needed a manager. So I jumped in and started managing them.
A lot of people in this industry are influenced early on by maybe their favorite artists. And that's the thing that drives them to want to be in the music biz. Is that your story as well?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I grew up listening to a lot of Notorious B.I.G. and Tupac and a lot of reggae artists. My family's from Jamaica. I was born in Jamaica, and okay. I grew up listening to a lot of reggae music. And I just love music. It was always on in my house when I was a kid. So I just naturally, gravitated towards it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the music industry has changed so much. It's not what it used to be. This is not your mom and dad's music industry. Just about anyone can upload their music to one of these digital media platforms, be it Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, and get their music out to their friends and family as well as to the masses. So from a legal standpoint, can you tell us how the music industry has changed for the better or worse over the past 10 years?
Well, I think it's interesting. From a legal standpoint, I think now, of course, you have to be a lot more mindful of, for example, tracking your songs better for airplay for plays on Spotify. That means when you put out music now, you have to make sure the metadata is included so you can get paid properly, any mechanical royalties, performance royalties, things like that. So there's just a lot more outlets, of course, right now that people can consume music. Back in the day when I was growing up in the 90s, I mean, basically you just bought music on CD format, or cassette format, or you heard it on the radio, and that's basically it. Now there's so many different ways to consume music. So of course there's a lot more opportunities out there for bootlegging and so forth. So from a legal standpoint, you just have to kind of make sure you have your stuff properly registered and it's put out properly. So people can have access to it and you're paid properly. But even just from a business standpoint, I think the industry is a lot different now because back in the day, people could do well, make a really good living from the music industry from just selling records. But of course, that's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's more beyond that, you have to go on tour, of course, and touring has always been a lucrative source of income for artists. But now, I mean, if you can get into other things, for example, Rihanna has a makeup line and a fashion line, and she's doing really well there. So I think that if artists can sort of build other businesses off of their music career, then that's to their benefit, basically, so they can build an empire, and just really make money that way.
Yeah, yeah. With all of these changes, man, many independent and underrepresented artists will say to themselves, look, I don't need a major or an indie label to get my music out to the people. I can just buy the latest DAW, whether that be Logic or Pro Tools, and I can create, mix, and master the music myself and then upload it to Spotify, Apple Music, or Amazon. I don't need these major labels. So, is that something you would encourage independent, underrepresented artists to do, to just go it alone and bypass these major and independent labels altogether?
I think that if you're going to sign a record deal, it has to make sense for you and your particular situation. Back in the day, of course, the only way you could get your music out there, meaning in any real way, is to go through a record label. But of course, now, as you mentioned, anybody can put music out there. The hard part, though, is standing out from the pack, because now you're competing with just the whole slew of people who are putting out their music, and you have to figure out a way to stand out. So a label can help you do that, help you stand out from the pack, give you some good marketing, and just get you more exposure. But I always say, if you don't have to sign a record deal right away, don't do it. I think if you can achieve success on your own first, then it's a better business proposition, because then you have more leverage when you go to negotiate with a label. Basically, I always tell them, just build as much as you can until you just can't go any further without any help. And then, think about talking to a label. There are lots of artists out there who've done everything on their own and they've kept all the money. But then, of course, they're taking all the risk because they're financing the recordings. It's all on them to make something happen. So they don't really have that sort of partner there to help them out. So it's a double-edged sword in that sense. But I think that it really depends on if you need a record label and, if you get to that point where you need one, and then maybe think about signing a deal.
I believe you talked a little bit earlier about how the artists today, they're not just musicians. They're doing a lot of different things. They have their own clothing line. They're putting books out. They have a YouTube channel. They have their own perfume. I think it's so important for the independent and underrepresented artists to understand that the most successful artists today, they're diversified. They're doing a whole bunch of different things. Can you elaborate on that a little bit about the importance of being able to monetize other areas of your talent?
Well, back in the old days, you could sell CDs. For example, let's say you were an artist on a label, you could sell, a few million CDs, and then you would do well from that. And then that would turn into good profits from touring and other avenues. But nowadays, of course, it's hard to really make a lot of money from streaming, right? Because the payout is so low, basically, and people aren't buying physical media like they used to. So it's just, just the income isn't there like it used to be. And that's why I always say, if an artist can also, for example, be an influencer or get a sponsorship deal, or as you said, start a clothing line or some other businesses, then that's to their benefit, because they're sort of leveraging their music career in order to launch other endeavors. And I think it's just the reality, unfortunately, of where we are. I mean, I grew up, of course, where, you can sell a lot of records and make a lot of money, but now that's just not the case as much anymore.
In representing Janet Jackson, what do you think it takes to become a superstar, an A-lister? What are some of the qualities and traits you think A&R representatives at major labels are finding attractive in up-and-coming talent?
You know, it's interesting. I have a client who is a A&R at a major record label. He also manages on the side, so that's, I represent him for that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of asked him the same question one day, like, what do you look for in artists? And he says, you know, I really look for the strong sense of narrative. You know, they're building a world. Yeah. You know, like you listen to Jay-Z, you listen to Rick Ross, or you look at Lady Gaga, they've built a narrative and a world and a personality that you can really get absorbed in, like watching a movie. You know, you feel like you're really experiencing this world. And he said that's the important thing, is just really focus on building your narrative, building your world as an artist. And then that's what really draws people in. I think that's really important. And then even the other part of it too is I look at Janet Jackson, and you know, she's obviously been around for a very long time and very successful, but she still worked extremely hard. Like when she's about to, when she did her residency in Vegas, it was a year or two ago, she was really putting in the work with the choreography and the dancers, and she doesn't slack, you know? And so it doesn't matter how high you get on that ladder, you're still gonna have to work even that much harder to stay up there. Mm-hmm. So those are two things you have to really think about. The world you're building as an artist, and then also just, you know, never gets any easier as the higher you climb, and just have to understand that and keep working harder and harder as you go.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in reading your book, I was reminded how back in the day I would take a CD and put it in an envelope and mail it back to myself. And I was told that that was an easy, cheap way of doing a copyright. We called it a poor man's copyright. I'm not sure if anyone's doing that today, but just curious, does that kind of stuff work? Is that even legal?
Well, so it's funny because the copyright law, the way the copyright law works is that you have a, technically have a copyright in something the moment you create it. However, if you ever want to sue somebody in court, you need that actual registration with the Library of Congress. Mm. So it's like, yeah, technically you have a copyright, but to enforce it, you're going to need that registration. So I would recommend registering it, you know, just as early as you can.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Talk a little bit about the PROS, the performing rights organizations, and why it's so important to affiliate with one of them. And maybe share some of the differences or explain some of the differences between them.
Sure, yeah. Well, basically, the PROs in America, the three of them are ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. And basically, what they do is they'll go out and license venues and radio stations and basically anywhere that broadcasts or plays music publicly, they're going to give the negotiate licenses with them. And so what happens is whenever a song, a composition is played on the radio, the songwriters get paid a cut of that. Same thing if it's broadcast on television, if it's played at the Staples Center or whatever, anywhere. And you know, there's these hundreds of thousands of licenses out there, and they collect all this money, and they have like sort of like a pot, right? Like a pie, and they divide it up between the songwriters and music publishers that they represent. So it's really important that songwriters register their compositions with a PRO. You can only be a member of one PRO at a time. So you have to choose ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC. There's a newer one called GMR. And so you can only be a member of them of one at a time, and then you register your compositions, and then they'll basically send you a check if your stuff ends up on the radio or TV or whatever. And that's why it's important to make sure you're properly registered. Some people, though, I find that some clients have a misconception that the PRO is just going to collect all of the money you're owed, and that's not the case. They only collect that one specific kind of royalty called a public performance royalty. So whenever a song is played publicly or broadcast, they'll collect that money and then distribute it. They don't collect record royalties. They don't grant licenses to use your music in like a film or TV show. Those are separate things. The PROs only collect this one narrow form of income.
Can you explain exactly where and how the PROs get the money to pay the artist?
So they'll negotiate blanket licenses. So, for example, they'll go to the Staples Center and say, look, Staples Center, you have concerts here. You have to pay us a blanket license that'll cover you for the next year. And then basically for that year, you can play any of the compositions that we represent. Any artists that come here can do that. Mm-hmm. Same thing with, like I said, a radio station. You know, Hot 97 in New York, I'm sure they have these, those licenses in place, those blanket licenses to play those compositions. So anywhere that plays music or broadcasts music, they need to get these licenses. And that's where how they, that's where they collect from.
Destroy.
The podcast helping entrepreneurs and creators conquer the barriers between them and the people. For more of my interview with Kamal Moo, continue to episode 4, part 2.